And if you want to get through to Congress and call about that vote on the Contra 8, the phone number 202-224-3121. The vote is February the 4th. This is our chance to show what kind of people we are and at least make our voices heard. The government, Reagan's government, has continued to send weapons to Central America. And this past week, a plane was down that just had delivered lethal weapons. There are some uncommitted votes in the House that I don't want to give all the names on the air. Well, I can do it real very quickly. A few of them: Jim Leach, James Lightfoot, Representative McKay, Democrat Dan Micah, Jim Slattery from Maine, Olympia Snow from Massachusetts, Sylvia Conte from Michigan, Carl Purcell, Frank Guarino, Mario Biaggi. I don't know if you will contact them or your California congressmen, the ones you want to know. There's a few more of the uncommitted, but just call up and give your support for holding back the money for the lethal aid at a time when people are trying to get some peace down there. Ronald Reagan, of course, has to interject and break it up all of the time and be the whole king of the jungle, ordering everybody's lives around at his own beck and call. Now, this morning on C-SPAN, I was watching George Shultz talk about the INF Treaty. And, of course, the president spoke this evening. I didn't get a chance to hear it. I was on the way in here, as, of course, asking for money for the military, for the Contras. And, of course, the newspapers are just filled with the candidates and Republicans and the Democrats. And it is just terrible seeing them on television, you know, being interviewed, having their debates in Iowa and going on to the next debates this next weekend, and individual biographies and on television. These men are saying what they think should happen to America. And the truth of the matter is that the basic decisions are not made by them at all. They're made by a small clique that I want to talk about this evening because it is so dear to my heart. It's in the news now. And then next week, hopefully, we'll return again to some of the satanic cults, which are not separate from this exact team. But it's important to remember to feel, and it is true, that you are absolutely helpless unless you understand the forces that are making the determinations and the decisions for us. And you stop being helpless when you recognize where the decisions are made and try to stop that process. There was a very long article by Kenneth Sharp in the San Jose Mercury, November the 8th, titled, "The Foreign Policy is Run by the Security Elite. The Iran-Contra Report is Likely to Miss the Basic Connection." And what Kenneth Sharp is saying is that the congressional committees investigating the Iran-Contra affair will warn us against dangerous tension of covert policy and constitutional democracy, and that the hearings will talk about aberrations of people, that they went outside the law, that their laws are good, and it's just bad people or maybe a few bad laws is the source of the problem. And Kenneth Sharp says they miss the point about the root of the problem, and that is the content and not the process of foreign policy, that the aberration focuses on people's failures, ignorance, overzealous patriotism, and so forth. And the legal argument that they didn't obey the laws suggests that the founding fathers assumed that they had control of the abuse of power, and that these people unchecked will strain our institutional network the way it's set up. But what he said, what drives the security elites to abuse the constitutional authority is their domestic opposition to the policies and their unrealistic notion of what national security is, that the bombing of Cambodia, the Iran-Contra affair, is something that they want to do on their own, and that the enemy is actually United States, that it is us they are deceiving and keeping the information from. And he goes into the fact that when Richard Nixon was in trouble, that the enemy was the American people, that he knew the congressional opposition would be mobilized against what he did, and all of his actions were to control the minds of the domestic anti-war protesters at home and to control the people, and that he was determined to uphold credibility at all times, that we are free people, that Americans are free, that we have democratic institutions, that we choose who we elect, but that illegally they could wiretap and they could control what we see or hear and treat us like third world countries. And the major attempt was to stop American people from knowing what was going on in their own country. And the unraveling at the time of Watergate was a major attempt to bring home the very anti-democratic processes and unconstitutional operations used aboard. It wasn't the problem of covert operations that are legal or useful, but the unconstitutional ones that we use overseas are brought home to us at home. And this article says in every case where there are problems at home, the domestic opposition leads the security elite to undertake more and more anti-democratic and unconstitutional actions. And the opposition is in our looking at us at home and using the excuse of national security. And then this article goes on to say, since World War II, the U.S. policy towards the Third World was guided by presumption we have the right, we have the responsibility, we have the power to control the internal character of every regime, to get the leftist revolutionaries out of power, and also to do it in the United States, where people make intelligence choices. They think they have the power, under the guise of national security, to tell us what is going on. Now, since World War II, translated, means since Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence east, came to the United States with other top Nazis of the Waffen-SS and literally rewrote our national constitution by making a national security council that never was there before. And then they could do all the aberrations. And the problem is that our foreign policy is made by this elite who have decided to impose our will, their will, on anybody, not only overseas, but at home. And they can install any government they want, and whether it's Guatemala or the United States, and their efforts to carry out their goals are unrealistic because once in a while Congress pops its head up and says, what is going on? And the argument of national security is not pertinent to these matters. And the conclusion of this article is that the real solution is not getting new people in or passing new laws, but a serious challenge to the fundamental assumptions of United States foreign policy. As long as the United States insists on exercising control in the Third World, or even places like the Philippines or Iran or all over the world, the countries that we control, everywhere, whether it doesn't matter which country we control it, as long as we insist on controlling these countries, the cost at home will keep generating strong domestic opposition. The security elites define this opposition as dangerous to the programs that they call national security, and they will have an incentive to take action that threatens constitutional democracy. And those who want to seek to protect the Constitution have to constantly come in and say, are we doing this for anti-communism, or must we protect ourselves? And the gist of this article is that a small elite clique are running this country. Now, several months ago in November, I had on World Watchers the fact that a new group was selected by Ronald Reagan just at the time of the heat of the Iran-Contra affair, as it was winding down, to select a committee to decide the foreign policy for the next 20 years. Remember the long listeners of World Watchers that I had that on the air. And, of course, they did get together, and their report was given to the president this week. The group is called the Commission on Integrated Long-Term Strategy, and it has 13 experts, and the head of the policy of this commission was Fred Ickley, I-K-L-E. He was very much part of the Iran-Contra affair mess in the Defense Department and the national security, and Fred Ickley chaired a 13-member committee, and on the committee is the well-known Henry Kissinger, who runs most affairs international in this world, Zbigniew Brzezinski, retired Army General John Vesey, W. Graham Clater, Deputy Secretary of Defense, and the co-chairman was Alman Holsteter, W-H-O-H-L-S-T-T-E-R. There were two retired generals, an admiral, and then it was also co-chairman, one of the important people with Brzezinski, Kissinger, Vesey, is Reagan's old pal William Clark, former National Security Advisor, who suggested that all the Iran-Contras get a pardon immediately. And William Clark, through military intelligence, brought the notorious Helene von Damm into this country, where she connected with Otto von Bolschwing in Sacramento and made this connection with Ronald Reagan. He brought her as part of military intelligence. Now, this committee issued a report on what they're going to do with America, and it's pertinent because of the INF Treaty, whether it is signed by the House and Senate or not, and the discussion of it in the summit. This article, there are several articles that were in the paper this past month. Pentagon plan to move away from N arms. This article from the San Francisco Examiner says the blueprint of the Commission on Integrated Long-Term Strategy outlines a new generation of brilliant, in quotes, brilliant, their own conventional weapons. And they tell you, and you can't call it the secret team because they tell you what they're going to do. This first article says the Pentagon, anxious to broaden its ability to attack the Soviet Union. This is right there for, you know, the first war, first strike, attack the Soviet Union, so don't get taken in by the INF treaty, and whether it's ratified or not. The Pentagon, anxious to broaden its ability to attack the Soviet Union, is moving to augment the nation's doomsday nuclear arsenal, and they'll put that away with a multi-million-dollar array of brilliant non-nuclear capable of striking within 3 feet of targets in the Soviet Union. The plan to develop a new generation of devastating conventional ammunition for striking Soviet territory will be added to the existing arsenal of nuclear forces. It emerges past Tuesday in the blueprint for U.S. defenses of the 21st century. The United States relied too long on the do-or-die nuclear weapons. The Commission on Integrated Long-Term Strategy, with 13 members from the Defense Department, said that this plan is sorely needed. Atomic weapons are out. Forget about atomic weapons. With arms agreements raising the possibility of reducing nuclear forces, the Pentagon has commissioned a variety of highly classified projects to develop conventional explosives, guidance systems capable of striking deep within Soviet territory. Advanced missile accuracy makes the atomic weapons that we had non-functional anyway. So while there's so much brahu about signing a piece of paper between Mr. Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan, they already know what they're going to do. There are further refinements on Tomahawk cruise missiles to deliver high explosives, as I say, from 3 to 9 feet. The precision associated with the new technology will enable us to use conventional weapons and many of the missions once assigned to nuclear weapons. The most immediate use for the such highly accurate conventional weapons may be to defend the United States in the Third World, and U.S. warships operating in the Persian Gulf region would be armed with such material to strike within 3 feet of a target in Russia. Missiles with conventional warheads could be readily used by the United States in early stages of a crisis. The panel conceded that its outline would have little immediate effect on military planning, with presidential campaigns or the next administration most likely to use the document as a guideline, because this 69-page outline is for 20 years up through the year 2000 and more. And this is what will be presented to us, whoever is the president of the United States, whether it's Senator Gore or whether it's George Bush, whoever is the president of the United States will be told this is what you have to do, just as the plans to invade Cuba were laid out by the CIA and Alan Dulles and Richard Nixon. They told John Kennedy he had to do it, and when he pulled back, he had his head blown off. Another article in Wall Street Journal about the panel says Pentagon panel urges better strategies to deal with conflicts of the Third World. And this is so pathetic because these generals and admirals, and they're all white, that nobody comes from these areas, the Third World countries, to represent their interests or their feelings or their repressions. And they've made plans on how to control every Third World country and the means to do it and the weapons and the technology, which means that not only the elected democracies are plowed under, but the people that want to have a chance to start in each of these various countries where there's so much starvation, illiteracy, and so forth, have no idea that their future has been charted out by Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski and 11 other people. The Wall Street Journal says the Pentagon Commission warned that U.S. influence around the globe will decline unless this country sharpens its strategy for dealing in wars in the Third World, as if we needed that. The commission established to study military strategies for the next century, called on the Defense Department to broaden its focus for an all-out war emphasis from the current all-out war to smaller conflicts that erupt in developing worlds. They are obviously less threatening than a Soviet-American war would be, yet they have an accumulative adverse effect on U.S. access to critical regions, on American credibility among its allies and friends, and on American self-confidence. And you know, there was nothing like Grenada for American self-confidence for us to run in and just decimate the place, and that made us look strong again. The Wall Street Journal says the commission cited several trends and suggested that we might have a waning U.S. influence in developing countries and that a number of U.S. military officers in friendly countries might decline. So the U.S. military has to train people to send into the third world, as we did in 1970, and we're losing valuable links to military officers and U.S. bases. The commission, headed by Fred Eclay, he's a Swiss banking family, Defense Undersecretary, and Albert Wohlstetter, an authority on military strategy, said that the Pentagon is stumbling to establish an organization and a strategy to deal with guerrilla movements, low-intensity conflicts that often erupt in third world. And a year after Congress enacted legislation to set up a new defense organization to oversee these special operations, and that is in conflict right now, the appointment of this particular group, the Pentagon, is coordinating a program. The gentleman in question here is Kenneth Berquist, and I did a broadcast about him before, Berquist. He's from the Delta Force from Vietnam, from the Ollie North Michael Aquino School of the Phoenix Program and Terrorism. Kenneth Berquist was selected by this clique and by Frank Carlucci, and the Justice Department officially nominated him for the post to be in charge of guerrilla low-intensity conflicts all over the world to put down the native populations and have these special operation units going. Mr. Berquist's nomination is trouble. He faces opposition in Congress, and there are a lot of people that are not confident in his having this position, and they may leave the job vacant for a while. He's very controversial. Now, a article followed this at the same time this report came out by 5 days that Fred Eakley was stepping down. He has been close to Zbigniew Brzezinski and Richard Pearl, the Prince of Darkness. Mr. Michael Aquino calls himself the Prince of Darkness. So does Richard Pearl. They're both of the same ilk. And as soon as this group was put together, Fred Eakley, the Undersecretary of Defense, said that he's going to retire from the Pentagon. He's leaving the Reagan administration. Now, there is no need for jumping up and down and joyfully waving your hands. Fred Eakley's out. He's out. Because you remember when General Secord came home from Southeast Asia in the Phoenix program and was linked to the various narcotic traffickers and torturers and murderers. He said he retired from the Air Force in 1983, at which point he went into the anti-terrorist unit, terrorism equating drug traffic and repressions. And Secord then moved on to the National Security Council. So he wasn't even on the payroll of the Pentagon. He was employee of the government. And now with Albert Hakim has sequestered 6 or 7 million of his own, held at Merrill Lynch in London. But it's interesting that Richard Pearl and Fred Eakley and John Layman, the Secretary of the Navy, these three have left the Reagan administration, but don't believe they have left. I believe they've gone from the Pentagon to the National Security Council, the National Security Agency. And the interesting part about Fred Eakley leaving 5 days after his commission was put together, it was the New York Times that said policy decisions in Eakley's office will be managed for the rest of the year by Richard Armitage, Assistant Secretary for Defense for International Security Affairs, and Ronald Lehman, recently named by Frank Carlucci as Assistant Secretary for International Security Policy. Armitage is one of the Pentagon's most influential policymakers, especially on foreign aid and covert operations. Now, that is the Richard Armitage named by Bo Greitz as being part of the drug traffic, working with Kunsan and Theodore Shackley, bringing a lot of narcotics into this country. And he is linked to not only to the Middle East, to Southeast Asia drug traffic, but to the Middle East, the drug of Kunsan into the Middle East and back to the United States through that route, which I'll get to in a moment. So Armitage is not being kicked out. Ross Perot, who is a staunch conservative Republican, went to Washington and went to the Reagans because Mrs. Reagan has been saying, say no to drugs, and he asked them to go into the drug trafficking allegations of Richard Armitage, and they told him to butt off. Frank Carlucci said, get out of it, and the White House said, get out of it, and Ross Perot came back disappointed because of the hard evidence of the drug trafficking control of Armitage. So that by Fred Eakley leaving and turning his job over to Armitage, it means exactly that the drug dealers are moving up into the Defense Department. And when Martha Mitchell said at the time of the water break-ins that the mafia was in the White House, She got a needle in her fanny and died of cancer a few years later, got injected, and it seems that Fred Eakley has moved over to let Armitage in a position where he should be investigated on the charges of the drug trafficking with Kung Sa and Theodore Shackley. But instead of that, he's moving into a higher position in the Defense Department, so-called terrorism. The terrorism unit is the drug traffic unit. And Armitage was also in the Middle East with Oliver North when they were getting a ship and buying weapons for the Contras from the largest drug trafficker in Syria, linked to the terrorism of Kili Laura and the terrorism of the Middle East. So the Defense Department not only has a plan for the next 20 years set up by war criminals such as Zbigniew Brzezinski and Henry Kissinger, but they have Armitage, the drug dealer, and, of course, where these people have taken countries such as Iran. The drug traffic poured into this country, Southeast Asia. When we got in there, the drugs came in. When we went into Central America, in Bolivia and Brazil, the drugs poured into the United States. When we were working in Laos and allegedly trying to help the Laotians with a conflict against communism, and came the Nguyen Bank in Australia, and the drugs pouring into the United States. And wherever we have had military action, it seems to be for the purpose of increasing the profit of the drug profiteers. There was an article in Spotlight magazine in May 1987 about a mystery man, Noel Koch, who was faceless until the Iran hearings, and then his face was seen on the television screen. He testified, and Noel Koch was in charge of counterterrorism for Ronald Reagan, and he served also in the Defense Department policy under Secretary Fred Eakley, and worked with him. And these people have been close to the Mossad in Italy, and they've been close to the drug traffic and the Defense Department. And there's a nest of people who, if they're leaving, we have to watch them if possible. We won't know where they are unless there's a scandal that comes up a few years later. But Noel Koch, the mystery man, was involved with the arms to the Ayatollah Khomeini, and also that group diverted the money down to Central America, worked under Fred Eakley, and was part of the Criminal Investigation Division. And Koch was a fundraiser for Nixon. But the important thing is that he worked closely with Richard Perle, International Security Policy Assistant Secretary, in that, and that Fred Eakley, who set up this commission with the policies for the next 20 years as chairman of that group, has worked with these mystery people who were involved with the Iran-Contra affair, and he seems qualified to decide our policy for the next years. There also was another story on this matter in the Los Angeles Times. United States urged to revise security plans for the future. It's about the Blue Ribbon Bipartisan Committee, who laid out their coherent and integrated strategy for a wide range of conflicts that the nation would fight. Low-intensity conflicts will continue. A 69-page report of the commission details 8 separate topics and their plans for the future, and how we will aid the anti-communist guerrillas in all these various countries, and how this plan for the next 20 years includes the control of space in wartime. That is increasingly vital, and the United States has satellites to monitor arms control treaties and give warning of a nuclear attack, but we will need the control of space for wartime, and it also has to do with a first strike, this committee, a first strike against the Soviet Union. Among its major points, the commission includes a wider range of contingencies in 2 extreme threats, an all-out nuclear war, and a massive conventional Soviet invasion of Central Europe. What would we do? And therefore, we need a first strike. And then this low-intensity conflict is the one, the form of warfare in which the enemy is more or less omnipresent, unlikely ever to surrender. Those are the poor people who have nothing to lose by fighting. The report says that such conflicts we should view as protracted wars, like the 20-year war, like the PLO against Israel. That will be a protracted war. They will go on unending and continue on and on. So they have set aside areas where there will be protracted conflict. That's why we arm Iraq and Iran at the same time, to get our ships in the Gulf, and protracted conflicts wherever the situation arises, that we can step in, send arms to both sides, and keep it going indefinitely. And this is barbaric, people just dying like flies across the globe, terrible phony elections. You see the election in Haiti, where 34 or 40 people were killed. In the Philippines, 80 were killed. The countries like Paraguay have no elections, the election frauds where people are killed in violence. In South Korea, our so-called allies having these wonderful elections that are total fraud. And then we must look at ourselves and say, are our elections a fraud? Because whoever gets in, the policies are made by this team. And if whoever is elected doesn't take their orders, they'll get their heads blown off like John Kennedy's did. And in conclusion, I just want to cite an article from a newspaper in Rome, April the 8th, 1987, sent to me by a listener who does translations for me and David Emery, about the warlords of the Middle East, the terrorists, the Sicilians, the Golden Triangles, the group that are on trial, the Stibam group in Italy, and how they went to Thailand to meet Kung Sao. And Kung Sao was sending his narcotics then into Europe from the Golden Triangle. And, of course, this opium is tied to the Vatican, the P2, and the powers that be in Italy that we've done so much about in regarding the politics of Italy. And that also ties in the drug traffic that Mr. Armitage is involved in. Well, this concludes the first part of World Watchers. These events of the next 20 years, I think, are important to sit back and see how the policies are made by a handful of people. It is really pathetic. In conclusion, I want to say the previous hour of World Watchers has been made possible in part by Aries Arts in the heart of Capitola Village, serving Santa Cruz's growing consciousness for over 20 years. My name is Mae Brussel. The program is World Watchers. The first hour is news. The second hour is your chance to call in, tell me what you're thinking and seeing and feeling about. There's certainly so much, and I can't cover it in the first hour. So hang in there. Be ready to call 375-3082, and I'll be back with you in about 2 minutes.